This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
There's been a lot of questions about what happened in chambers with Judge Gull in the Delphi murder case. Recently, Judge Gull dismissing, kicking out of the trial, the defense team for Richard Allen, Bradley Rossi, and Andrew Baldwin, his attorneys. And they have taken it now to the Indiana Supreme Court with requests to be reinstated and for them to take a good look at what exactly Judge Gull has been up to in these proceedings. They're saying that, you know, we should not have been removed from this case, and we want to represent our client. But what happened in those closed doors? Was it a secret? Why was it a secret? In my hand, I hold the answers to those questions. This is the actual filing that just came out from the court. This is the record. This is the recording of that very conversation. And I'm going to read it to you here in full on camera. It's about a 20-some page read. But this is going to answer all of those questions of what was happening in those chambers. What exactly was said to Baldwin and to Rossi from Judge Gull? So without further ado, let's go into Delphi murder story time and get into these documents. I also have it on my screen in front of me here, so I don't have to be staring down the whole time. We're just going to start from the top here. Page 5 is where it really begins. Before that, it's a lot of legalese introducing the parties and the case number and things of that nature. So it starts out, and this is literally, it's like a play, if you will. It's going to say who's saying what, and then the actual statements, and I will read that as it is written. It starts out with attorney Nicholas McLeland saying, "Judge, I want to do some introductions. I finally got approval from our counsel to hire a paid attorney to help me." The court says, "Okay." McLeland, small town local government. So this is Jim Littoral. He's a retired prosecutor from Grand County. He's decided or agreed to come on board. The court, "Okay, have a seat." McLeland, "He signed the oath to my office." "Okay." McLeland, "And all that, I'm going to handle a written appearance." Attorney James Littoral says, "Nice to meet you, Judge." The court, "Nice to meet you, Jim." McLeland, "Next week." "Okay." The court, "Okay, maybe tomorrow. If I have time, Judge, if I get it done." They were referring to that written appearance, I believe, there. The court says, "Okay." McLeland says, "But he will be entered in, and we're trying to get him up to speed." The court says, "Okay, well, good." Then we have Rossi speaking here for the first time. It says, "Well, I'm the one that kind of asked to huddle up, so if you want me to lead or if you want me to say some things, I'm okay with whatever approach you want to take." The court says, "Go ahead." "Well, I think," and the court interrupts saying, Jody's got our portable FTR going, just so that we've..." "Oh, okay, that's fine," says Rossi. "Got a record," says the court. Rossi says, "You know, obviously I'm happy to hear that the court's going to make some decisions on the pending pleadings today." "Uh-huh." Affirmative response from the court. Mr. Rossi says, "I assume Andy feels the same way. We, you know, it's time to get some closure, if you will, with regards to those items so that we can move forward. It's probably obvious that the tension from our side is coming, you know, from the words disqualification that were murmured in the phone conference that we had a couple weeks ago. I'm assuming you understand how that kind of raises the intensity level of the circumstances. And I guess my, if I have a concern today, it's that, you know, we're going to go out on that kind of in the public, so to speak, in the courtroom on the record and have a discussion about an ongoing investigation. And that's what I kind of gathered from the email. You know, I think you've invited Nick to talk about that if he wanted to." The court says, "Uh-huh," in an affirmative response. Rossi continues, says, "And you know, it makes me a little uncomfortable because I don't know, first of all, there are no pleadings that are pending. Whatever their motions to disqualify or contempt, citations, or whatever they might be that really frame any of the issues, I have no problem. I mean, I don't have any problem talking about this stuff privately on the record in a, you know, in an ex parte type confidential hearing. I just think it's difficult to expect that there will be any kind of structure to the idea of, you know, hey, there's an ongoing investigation and just tell us what's going on. And I don't know that it has any relevance to what we're really trying to accomplish today. And I also don't know why Nick would want to talk about an ongoing investigation in public, knowing that in itself could be a little damaging to their circumstances. And so we're lawyers. We're used to having issues framed. We're used to having an opportunity to prepare. I don't have anything to hide, and I know he doesn't have anything to hide. You've maybe gathered that we've cooperated. We ran into the state police posts, our respective posts, if you will, and I had somebody advise me of my rights, and I waived those, and I gave a formal statement. He did the same, and I'm not sure that we're going to benefit or that this will be productive to just open floor this, and that's my biggest concern today. The court says, an affirmative response. Baldwin goes on and says, I'm more of a, like, the due process side. I'm not really sure, what will happen, but I just don't know. I don't know what's going to happen, and I would like the opportunity to know what's going to happen and prepare for their claiming or whatever before it happens. And I don't want to say ambushed, but it's hard to know for me what to do when I don't know what's happening. There's not a pleading we can respond to, things like that. So, you know, you had indicated that, you know, when he and Nick said, I don't know if he said word disqualification, but the court says, oh, he did, Mr. Baldwin. Was it that word? Mr. Baldwin says, the court says, an affirmative response. Mr. Baldwin says, okay, I didn't know if he just said it in a more generic way. The court, in a negative response. Mr. Baldwin, and your response was, you know, I'm leaning in that direction or something along those lines. The court, in an affirmative response. Mr. Baldwin, and so that's, you know, a cause of concern. I mean, we're still wanting to try this case in January, and I'm willing to, you know, we have made changes at my office that will prevent this from ever happening again, you know, and we can take directives from the court. We can, you know, we're locking down every single thing on Delphi. It's in a dedicated room. We put locks on our conference room or the war room where this guy went, my friend, went in and did this without my knowledge. And that no document, whether it's benign or something super, you know, like a crime scene photo, is ever going to be left alone for a single solitary second ever again. So, you know, I'm hoping that can be something that the court, you know, can say, all right, that's fine, and then let's get on with the trial, but I'll shut up now. The court says, anything, Nick? McLeland chimes in, says, Judge, I guess my plan today was to give the court a summary of the investigation. I've got witnesses here and exhibits to present that go towards the investigation. I'm more than happy to hand those over to the defense. Excuse me. I know it may harm the investigation, but I think it would be important that the court hear these things. I guess the heart of it, inaudible investigation, I think it's important. I think the importance of you hearing is outweighed by that. And so I have those things. Take a quick sip of water. I'm concerned that the leak is not just a one-time leak. The evidence that we have shown is an ongoing leak. However, it's being done, and it's just, what's next? I have an issue. What's next? I mean, I spent the past 17 days investigating this in day when I should have been focused on preparing for trial. And when I say night and day, I mean phone calls at 2 a.m., 3:30 a.m., night and day. And so that's where I'm at, Judge. Again, I'm an officer of the court. I'm reporting to the court what I know, and that's kind of where I see my role. The court says, okay. Mr. Rossi goes on saying, you know, this is starting to scream due process to me. I haven't seen any of these exhibits, and I don't really know, frankly, I don't know anything about any of this. And I'm not distancing myself from Mr. Baldwin. I'm just saying I have no connection with any of these people, okay? And the idea that somehow the prosecutor is going to get to roll out a bunch of statements and exhibits, you know, testimony without us having any forewarning or any idea, any way of scrutinizing that, seems a little outside the boundaries of due process to me. Plus, again, I get back to what is the relevance to what is going on in this case? Why we are going to use an open courtroom to air an ancillary matter. It's not really connected in any way at this point to the proceedings that are ongoing, whether it's the Franks issue or anything of that nature. I'll tell you this, I'm prepared to show the court this. I would rather do it in private. The problem has been a problem for the very beginning I have 10 pages of a deposition transcript in this file from my deposition, our deposition that I took of Trooper Holman in this case. And in that deposition, he talks openly about how there were crime scene links from the very beginning, unequivocal crime scene leaks, and that as soon as this crime occurred, they were investigating information that had been released because there were lay people that were part of the search party, and the implication is I've got the transcript, is that these people that found those girls started to essentially disseminate or distribute information, and law enforcement essentially tried to catch up with them, but it was really too late. As you might expect, once it gets in the hands of the public, it's too late. So he told us that almost volunteered that information to me in the deposition. The second concern I have is that I think I shared with the court, just as an example, a week or two ago, somebody sends me a court TV, you know, bit. And I can assure you that I've never watched one of those bits on this case. I don't even know if I've ever really watched court TV. Maybe back when The Simpsons was ongoing, I don't know. And in that bit, Barbara McDonald is talking two different occasions. She mentioned how she's getting information from investigators on the ground that were at the crime scene. Now, we can all draw implications about that, but most importantly, it was corroborated by the fact that she was holding in her hand documents that I know to be directly related to the Purdue report. I mean, I saw the pictures. I know where those came from. And if, you know, the point here is I'm going to say this maybe a little loosely, but forgive me, I don't care. I don't care that all this stuff is out there because it's been out there for 5 or 6 years. I don't have time. He doesn't have time. He doesn't have time to sit and try to marshal all of this stuff while the case is ongoing because there's no end to it. But the point is the court needs to have some context that this is nothing new. I'm super. I lost sleep over the fact that there's a man who's dead and I don't even know. And frankly, Andy doesn't know, and it's tragic. I don't know what life circumstances he had or what surrounds us. None of that information has been shared with us. But at the end of the day, what's going on in the cyber world and in the public, as you might expect in a case of this magnitude that's been publicized for 6 years, was beyond our control before we even got involved. Mr. Baldwin picks up saying there's even a guy in Florida who says the guy in Texas who leaked all this stuff has received from a disgruntled Carroll County employee a whole file filled with stuff and photos included. And I haven't seen the photos that were leaked. I don't know what they are. You know, I mean, if this could be set for a formal hearing in the future where we could have a chance to do it the right way, then that's one thing. But, you know, to go in there and we don't have any counter way of counteracting anything, if I know what that is, I can say, oh, okay, that's, I know what this is, or I don't know what that is. And it's, you know, in the meantime, you know, we can, I don't know, we honestly, this is the worst, lowest point of my career right now because somebody did what they did to me. And I, you know, that has nothing to do with Richard Allen. The court says it certainly does not. By the way, I'm reading this verbatim, so I know it sounds a little choppy, but that's how this was all said. Mr. Baldwin continues saying Richard Allen needs to have counsel there. So I just don't want to go in there and not be able to fight back with with evidence that we or witnesses that we have to counteract whatever claim they have. So, and then the court interrupts saying, here are my thoughts in no particular order. I don't know how many folks are out there, and I certainly don't wish to air publicly to the world the concerns that I have about this matter. My intent in having this hearing was to go through some of the pleadings that we have not yet decided. So I was going to start with reminding everybody about the decorum order, reminding everybody why we're here, to shut up, etc. There have been reports to my sheriff about disruptive people, and I will remind people if they are disruptive, they will be removed, and my sheriff is fully prepared to execute arrests if necessary, because I know we've seen in our other hearings, people have been disruptive and hateful. So, under the rules, under the canons of judicial conduct, I'm required to advise people within the room that the media is here and they are filming. They're doing a pool coverage. So, there's only one or two cameras in the courtroom and everybody's going to get coverage from that. And then, I want to talk about the pleadings. Defendant filed a verified motion for immediate transfer of custody. The state filed its response. The motion, again, has a lot of inaccuracies and some speculation, and it has been refuted ably, I think, by the affidavits that have been submitted by the state. And I'm going to deny the motion. The defendant then filed a motion of broadcasting order. The state filed its response. Your motion's overboard. It's got a lot of irrelevant verbiage in it, and I'm required to consider individual requests for hearings, so I will. If the media wishes to have an individual request submitted, they know fully well how to do that, and I've provided to counsel all of those requests that I've gotten so far for this hearing. So if you want to file them for a particular hearing, you're certainly welcome to do that, but the media is all over this, and they're not. They know how to do this. Mr. Rossi says, yeah, I was just trying to understand. Are you suggesting that you're going to determine that on a case-by-case basis or a hearing-by-hearing basis? The court says hearing-by-hearing. Rossi, okay. Court, yeah. Rossi, all right, okay. I just wanted to make sure I understood that. The court says the state filed its motion for leave of court to subpoena the third-party records. I think that was directed again to DOC. I clearly can't grant that. I'm going to grant the defendant's motion to quash, but if you continue to raise his medical and mental health in proceedings, that's fair game then for that to be provided to the state. You have also filed, Mr. McLeland, a motion for future pleadings and filings that be sealed prior to being released to the public. I've not gotten a response from the defense. Mr. Rossi, can I speak on that? The court says, sure. Mr. Rossi, I think it's important to note that you know we've had this discussion come up before, and there was basically, we decided, okay, we're done sealing stuff. We're going to make it public. I had, before we filed that Frank's brief, I had a long conversation with the court reporter, Karen Allen, over in Delphi, because I wasn't sure about Allen or Roller. I always want to call her Karen, McLeland Allen, Mr. Rossi, Karen Allen, because I wasn't sure about the mechanics of how all this stuff was moving from Delphi to your office. And I know that you had set up some kind of website or something that people could access. And I was under the understanding, I'm speaking with Miss Allen, I'm not blaming her for anything, but that when we file these things, they were going for them and they were hitting a button. We were filing with Carroll County. They were hitting enter and they were sending it to you. And you were essentially filtering this stuff, or at least you were sending it before it became public. The court, nope, Mr. Rossi. And so that's the way I, in talking with her, that's the way I understood the mechanics, which I think is what happened to a pleading the other day. From what I understand, we filed something, and you either put it in queue. I think there's, anyway, I tried to do some homework on that, and that's what I, Mr. Baldwin, comes in. I was part of one of those conversations. And she, that's what she said. The court, does that need a hearing? I'm happy to have a hearing on that. I don't have a problem with that. Mr. Rossi, well, I don't really, I guess. I'm just telling you for context. And that's what I, Mr. Baldwin, I mean, could there be a happy medium of we file it confidentially and then the judge then gets a chance to review it first? Because that's what we thought was going on anyway, but that's not what was going on. The court then says, no, it's being filed confidentially. If you mark it as such, Mr. Baldwin then says, I know, yeah, I wish I know that now. I had my staff mark the memorandum confidential after it had been filed and disseminated to the public because the actual warrant was in there, and that's covered under a miscellaneous cause number. I'm happy to have a hearing. Mr. Rossi then says, well, what is your ruling? I guess to make sure I understand, I don't want to fight about something that we don't need to argue about. The court says, I haven't ruled on that. Mr. Rossi, okay. The court, you haven't filed a response to that. Yeah, Mr. Rossi says. The court then says, my question is, do we need a hearing on that or do you wish to file a response? The Franks motion clearly needs a ruling and I'm working on that. The motion, the exhibits are about 1,500 pages and there are hours and hours of interviews that have been made available that my IT staff is now cleaned to make sure they're okay. We already talked about that. And then, I mean, that brings us to my concerns that I had, that I raised with all of you on our phone call, and I write everything out. And this is what I intend to say in open court. I have concerns regarding the defense team and the totality of the circumstances surrounding your representation of Mr. Allen. Candidly, my concerns began at our hearing on November 22nd of last year. Mr. McLeland filed a motion for gag order, and we were in chambers, and you assured me, gentlemen, we don't want the media in our lives. We will not try this case in the media. And less than 2 weeks later, you issued an undated press release that contained an awful lot of information that would not normally be revealed. I don't know. I think you know or should have known that those were potentially violative of the 3.6, Rule 3.6 and the Rules of Professional Responsibility. But it is that press release that prompted me to issue the order December 2nd, granting the gag order until further hearing. April 18th of this year, you filed a notice of tort claim against the Department of Corrections. You stated that the note that was your intent to pursue our client's claims against you, the full amount of damages sought on behalf of my client is unknown. I don't know how you could do that in representing Mr. Allen in a criminal matter and then launch off into a civil matter. I think that's inappropriate. May of this year, we were notified by the state of the Brandon Woodhouse arrest and the subsequent discovery of your work product, and I think it was an outline that you created for yourselves with the discovery. It was pretty detailed. I don't know if that's the right word. That apparently happened in December of last year, and that was not revealed to anybody, not shared with the court. It was shared with you, although apparently you guys knew about it, what was going on. Mr. Baldwin, he didn't know. The court, you knew. Mr. Baldwin, I did know. The court. So then Mr. Woodhouse gets arrested, and here we are, grossly negligent to email that to the wrong Brad. Your pleadings on the safekeeping order contain inaccuracies and falsehoods. That was proven in the hearing we conducted in June. The evidence presented by the state clearly demonstrated the falsity of your claims. And that was troubling to me. And then the last couple of weeks that we've been dealing with this, the state provided you discovery. That's been severely compromised. We now have an ongoing investigation. I'm not going to call it a criminal investigation. I don't know what it is, but it's clearly being investigated by the state of Indiana. Everyone involved has sought counsel, including you, Mr. Baldwin. You've had an attorney enter a written appearance this morning. I don't want to get into the investigation candidly. You are the constitutional authority for the state of Indiana. If you choose to pursue it, that is up to you. If you choose to abandon it, that is clearly up to you. I'm glad to hear that you have cooperated, but Mr. Baldwin's attorney has clearly shared. I don't know if you've seen his pleading. Mr. McLeland says, I saw a judge, yes. I got it kind of late. He emailed us then. Court says, okay, McLeland, I saw that was filed on the way here. Then we go on to the court. Well, yeah, so he's clearly shared it in his pleading down to the fact that an individual has committed suicide. He included the fact that you left materials all over a conference room table accessible to anyone, and this is a friend of yours who apparently you have consulted with on this case. So again, it's up to you if you wish to pursue that. I'm looking at the totality of the circumstances. You know, when I look at a suppression, the case law requires me to look at the totality of the circumstances. And that's what I'm doing. And it pains me to say this, but the totality of these circumstances demonstrate gross negligence and incompetence on the part of the defense team. I am unsatisfied with your representation of Mr. Allen. I am gravely concerned about his rights to have competent, non-negligent representation. He currently doesn't have that right now because what you have demonstrated is negligence and incompetence. Now I'm sharing my thoughts with you privately. I don't want to say this in open court. I would encourage you to talk privately about what you wish to do. I don't want this coming out. It is not where we need to be with this case. But I will. But you don't know that. You've just now been made aware of my concerns and where I'm landing. So if you wish to have a private conversation, I would encourage you to do that. I don't believe your client is here yet. No, he's not. Clearly, you need to speak to him as well. So Mr. Baldwin speaks up, says, I'm not good at reading between the lines. The court, you're a lawyer. That's what you do for a living. Mr. Baldwin, when you say have a private conversation, are you talking the four of us or I'm talking about you? I am not accusing the state of gross incompetence or negligence. I'm finding gross incompetence and negligence with you. Mr. Baldwin, so, okay, so, Mr. Rossi, forgive me, go ahead. Mr. Baldwin, no. Mr. Rossi, I mean, obviously, reading the tea leaves here, what you're giving us a chance to do is bow out gracefully, if you will, if that's the right term. Is there a scenario where the court would accept if I stayed in the case? I mean, I'm a team player and I'm not the kind of guy that just bails out on somebody just for the sake of doing it. But I think it's obvious that, you know, he can speak differently, but I'm not as connected to some of you, you know, this most recent circumstance as he is, Mr. Allen. is in a situation where he's going to have counsel that's, if he has new counsel, it's going to take them a year to get up to speed with the depths of information that continues to come in. And so I think that his Sixth Amendment rights matter. And, you know, I'm probably the one that can at least move this thing forward with some sense of judicial economy. I don't like it, and that's not what I intend to do when I came here today, but that would be kind of worst-case scenario on our side, you know, I guess. And so is that an option that the court would entertain? The court? No, Mr. Rossi. So basically what you're saying is you guys either quit on your own accord or you make me fire you. That's what the court? No. I'm saying to you that this is what I plan to say in court on the record when we convene at 2:00. Mr. Rossi, well, so is the culmination of that you're removing us from the case? The court, I will, based on what I've just shared with you. Mr. Rossi, okay, well, I just want to make sure we're at the court. I'm just giving you the opportunity to have a conversation, which, how do you want that to go? I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this, but I will if I have to. Mr. Baldwin, should we bow out gracefully? As Brad says, how would we even have a hearing? How would that go? Because if we're out of the case, then, Mr. Rossi, then you're going to go ahead and rule on a bunch of stuff without lawyers in the room? The court says, no, I would not do that. If you decide that your best course of action is to file a motion to withdraw, you can do that today. And I'll send Mr. Allen back to the DOC after you've had the chance to speak with him. Mr. Baldwin, would that happen before the hearing or after the hearing? That's the court. Your motion to withdraw would happen before the hearing. Mr. Baldwin, okay, that's what I wanted. Yeah, the court. Yeah, because he has rights, and I don't want those rights compromised by having a hearing with him, not having counsel. I assume if you choose to withdraw that his financial situation hasn't changed and he would still be entered into court-appointed counsel. I can't imagine that he has the ability at this point to hire counsel. I don't know that. Mr. Baldwin, Brad and I need to go talk. The court, yes, you do. Thank you, gentlemen. McLeland, yep, thank you, Judge. Then it's off record. The court picks up. Thank you, Jody. You're welcome, court reporter. The court, okay, yes. Mr. Rossi, all right. So obviously, we're kind of trying to figure out how to address this issue with very short notice, very little notice. The first thing we did really is to talk to the client. Court, an affirmative response. Mr. Rossi, our client is a big part of this, and the biggest part of this, and he has communicated to us that he does not want us to withdraw from this case. He wants us to continue with his representation. He understands, I think, that he's not the gatekeeper or he doesn't have the authority to really force the court to do that. He would like to say on the record, we asked him if that's what he wanted to do. We suggested maybe he would do it in chambers. It seemed a little bit of a difficult position to put a man who's accused but not been found guilty, put him in a courtroom and have him, you know, have to speak in the circumstance within 15 minutes notice. Andy and I'm going to speak for myself. I'll let him speak for himself. I'm going to file a motion to withdraw. I don't want to do it, but I don't think that I have a choice at this point. The options I've been given without any notice by the court really are either I withdraw or I'm going to be publicly shamed, and that's the way I see this. And I think that the public shaming is there's not only a professional element to that, I think there's a personal aspect to that too. But when the media is teed up like this, and you know, we show up here today with the court having told us that we're going to conduct some business and that somehow bleeds over into a forced resignation or whatever you want to, however you characterize this, that you know I don't feel like I have any other choice professionally. I have a life beyond this courtroom and beyond this case, and I have a family too, and I have a law practice. But I think, had been we given some notice that we were actually, if this would have been framed in a pleading format or some formal disciplinary claim which there's a process for that in our business, then we could have come in here today with an opportunity to refute some of those things that you clearly had, you know, thought though and prepared before we got here, and we didn't have an opportunity. And it's the idea that I'm going to have to go in here in an open courtroom and essentially defend myself against claims that I don't agree with without any notice and without any opportunity, I think is unfair. But I have some common sense. And, you know, me going in there and standing my ground because my client wants me to is just going to make things worse for him. And so I'm going to withdraw my appearance. I'm going to walk out of here. I'm going to go down to my car. I'm going to call my staff and have them prepare a motion. I'm going to withdraw my appearance, but I'm doing it because I don't think I have any other choice professionally, not because I want to and not because my client wants me to. And I respect the court has an opinion. but we're professionals and we can disagree. The court says, of course, Mr. Rossi. And you know, I am extremely, you know, I'd say frustrated, probably a soft word, with the idea that we showed up today without any real opportunity to prepare for any of this and just think it's improper. And that's where I am. And that's my position. The court, well, I think we talked about when you asked for a disqualification and I indicated on our phone conversation that I'm inclined to do that. Mr. Rossi, it was a phone conversation that was not on the record and then some follow-up emails. The court, true. Mr. Rossi, that's an informality. There's an informality to that. True, says the court. Mr. Rossi, and you also said that you hadn't even done any research and you hadn't, you know, had time to talk to your senior judge. All these other things. And he hasn't filed a pleading with the court either. The court, no, I'm doing this on my motion. Mr. Rossi says, and I'm a lawyer who practices in lots of courtrooms. And I've been through some disqualification actions. In 20 years, I've never had a disciplinary complaint in my life that's been confirmed, if you will. But I've seen lawyers disqualified, and there is a process for that. And it's not this, with all due respect. Whether you walk into somebody's office, a judge's office, and read a prepared statement to you, and essentially that statement is an indictment of my professional, you know, activities, and then you've handed a, you know, essentially a sheet of paper with two, you know, with two options, and one of them is I'm gonna go out here and shame you, or you can quit. I can't understand how upset that would make any lawyer. And I don't think it's the right way to handle this from a due process standpoint. So I have no choice but to, you know, withdraw my appearance because I'm not going to go in there and take a public shaming without having any notice of it. I just, you know, it's, that's where I am with it. Mr. Baldwin, I'm the same withdrawing. I mirror what he said. I mean, I do appreciate giving us advance notice if there's some appreciation for that. I do appreciate that. But beyond that, I want to take this, you know, I want to take this and finish it out. I'm stunned. I don't know what to say. So I'll just say, I'm moving to withdraw orally. The court, okay. Mr. Rossi, is the court going to generate some further instructions on what to do with all this discovery that we have? And the court says, I already have. Mr. Rossi, all of this information and the court, there's an order. I granted the state's protective order on discovery. Mr. Rossi, no, I'm talking about my possession of all this information. Am I to take it out to the trash can? Am I supposed to wait for another attorney? Is the court going to give us some guidance on how to move all this information from our law office? The court, I did, Mr. Rossi, to another. The court, when I granted the state's protective order, I think it's the last paragraph of that protective order, directs you to return it all to the state of Indiana. All the copies, all of the whatever you gave them, they are required under that order to return to you. Mr. Rossi, at the conclusion of the case, the court, or your representation, Mr. Rossi. I know what order you're talking about. I read the order before I came today. The court, okay, Mr. Rossi. So we're supposed to just take everything back and give it to the state and then just retain our work products until somebody asks us for it? The court, your work product is your work product. I mean, I would hope that you would share that with a successor counsel. I would hope that you would help successor counsel just with the transfer of all the information because that's in your client's best interest to do that, but that's entirely up to you. That's your work product that you've developed. I mean, clearly the discovery is required to go back to the state. Mr. Rossi, okay, thank you. What do you want to do with Mr. Allen, the court? I can transport him back to the Department of Corrections. Mr. Rossi, you want to make a record with his? I mean, I think it's appropriate that the court let him speak on the record, his thoughts, unless the court just accepts that as notice that those are his opinions. The court, well, you wouldn't lie to me about that, Mr. Rossi. I would not lie to you about anything. The court, so of course, that's your representation, that's what he would say if he were brought in here. I can't imagine DOC being comfortable bringing him into my office. I would not be comfortable having him in my office. Mr. Rossi, would the court be inclined to mark as an exhibit the prepared statement so that it's part of the record? The court, I have record rolling. Okay, Mr. Rossi says. The court, yes, Mr. Baldwin. So we're going to leave, I guess, and you're going to, how is this? You're just going to get up to the bench and say, the court, I'll just indicate to Mr. McLeland's going to be in there with Mr. Luttrell. And I'll just say, we've had a turn of events and defense counsel is withdrawing. And that's all I'm going to say. Mr. Baldwin, can you wait for us to get out there? The court, of course, we can have you. I don't know where you're parked at. We have a hearing set for October 31st, and I'd like to keep as trial setting an appointment of new counsel. And if you can get things together by that date to return to Mr. McLeland, that would be good. Otherwise, if, with your permission, I will give your successor counsel contact information. Mr. Baldwin says, okay. Mr. Rossi says, okay. The court says, where are you parked? Mr. Rossi says, nice to meet you. Sorry to inaudible. Mr. Luttrell, inaudible. Mr. Baldwin, just right out there in front of the building. I mean, that's the parking lot. There's a little parking lot right in front of the building. I don't know what. The court, everybody's in the courtroom, so I don't think that anybody's out in the hallways. Mr. Rossi, I'm going to go get my staff member. I'm going to have her. I don't need any. We'll rendezvous at some point, and I'll try to get the stuff back. Mr. McLeland, okay, that's fine. Between Steve and I and Sarah and you, Mr. Rossi, okay. Mr. McLeland, we will get it all. Mr. Rossi, that's fine. McLeland, done. That's either Sarah, Mr. Rossi, thank you. The court, thank you. And then that concludes the proceedings had in camera on October 19th, 2023 in the case. And there's a certificate of the reporter at the end of this that basically verifies and states that all of that took place and all of that is factual. That is the entirety of this document, of what took place in chambers with Judge Gull and the attorneys for Richard Allen. Appropriate? Inappropriate? Was she overstepping? Were Bradley Rossi and Andrew Baldwin overstepping? Or are they at fault for gross negligence or misconduct for having that information in their conference room and someone was able to get in and steal images of it, take pictures of the material and leak it out? A lot of questions here. Ultimately, at the end of the day, we're trying to find justice for two little girls who were murdered. And the man that stands accused of it doesn't have a ton of strong evidence against him. But we do have a system in Delphi, Indiana, that looks very, very suspicious. We'll keep you up to date on this. I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for watching.
Want to listen ad-free? Want advanced access to all of our interviews before anyone else?
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
You get every episode commercial-free,
so you can binge on true crime
until you can binge no more.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts now, or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast next.